What brings a community together? Shared insights? Shared conversations? Welcome to Open Door by Cox Communities, tackling the big questions on the minds of smart community business leaders.
Welcome to Open Door by Cox Communities, a show dedicated to bringing you the latest information, hottest trends, and newest technologies for you to consider when making decisions for your multifamily communities. Hi, I'm your host, Valerie Sargent. And today we're discussing the limitations of first generation IoT technology and exploring the significant advancements that have been made. So I'm thrilled to say that I have two incredible guests with me. First, we have Ned Murphy, the President and Chief Operating Officer of Ambient Property Technologies. With extensive experience in the multifamily industry, Ned has been at the forefront of integrating innovative technologies to enhance property management and resident experiences. And joining us as well is Guillermo Rivas, the Vice President of New Business Development at Cox Communities. Guillermo brings a wealth of knowledge in developing cutting-edge solutions for multifamily communities, focusing on connectivity and technological advancements. Together, they'll share insights into the early challenges, lessons learned, and the exciting future of IoT in multifamily communities. So get ready for an engaging and informative conversation. Welcome, Ned and Guillermo. Thanks so much for joining us today. I'm happy to be here with you.
Glad to be here too.
Hi, Valerie. Really glad to be here as well.
So, Ned, I'm hoping we can take a little journey back in time, and perhaps you could give us a brief overview of what IoT technology initially promised back in the day for multifamily communities when it was first introduced.
Sure. So, I think back in the day, for IoT technology for multifamily is about the mid-2010s. And at the time, there was a real increase in interest for smart home technology because of companies like Nest. And around the same time, there was a real increase in adoption of IoT applications for industrial and commercial businesses. And what's interesting about multifamily is it's a combination of those two things, right? Every property is a business. At the same time, every property is providing homes for residents that live there. So the promise of IoT from the beginning was to provide the same convenience and comfort to residents of a home as you would see in a single family home, while also getting the efficiency and the safety to a business that you would experience from industrial and commercial IoT.
So Guillermo, what were some of the shortcomings of that first generation of IoT technology in multifamily communities?
I think one of the most significant ones was assumptions made on connectivity. From a connectivity standpoint, I think that first generation over-relied on cellular connectivity. I think owners and solutions providers quickly found out that cellular connectivity throughout an entire campus is very difficult to ensure. So it's very difficult to ensure that 100% of the devices would be connected and sending signals back to the cloud.
How so? I'm just wondering a little bit more, like, why is that difficult to ensure?
Cellular connectivity, as we know, if you especially live in an apartment, but if it's a high rise with lead windows and all of that, you're going to have a lot of difficulty with getting a cellular connection, getting anywhere from 2 to 5 bars, and in some cases, getting no bars in units, depending on where they're at the campus and how far away they are from an actual cell tower.
Right. I know I lived in a neighborhood where my cell phone store was right up the road, but actually at my apartment, I had difficulty getting a signal. So I've been there actually, now that I think about that.
Yeah, absolutely. And you'd be surprised, especially in new developments, both single family and apartments. In the new development, cellular connectivity is really based on density. Mm-hmm. As far as new towers going up. So if it's a brand new development, the density is not there to meet a new cellular tower going up. So especially in new build, there were a lot of connectivity challenges for those providers that were counting on a cellular connectivity to get back to the cloud.
So Ned, what were some of the main concerns from residents and property managers from a data privacy standpoint too? I know that was always an issue when that technology first came in.
Yeah, I think whenever you have new technology, there's always a settling out period. And in the early days and 2010s, I think companies and providers were still trying to settle on the best business model. And some folks saw that the data that was gathered by the platforms that they were deploying, that data, they could try to monetize that. So they could sell resident and sort of staff user data to third parties, and they could make revenue from that. Some folks even marketed to owners and developers that that's part of the way that they made money. What we always knew over the years is that taking that approach was going to pretty quickly undermine the trust of the end users. And if you undermine the trust of the end user and the customer, you're not going to have a very successful business. So I think the way that that's evolved over time is that there has been a sort of shift, I think, in the industry, maybe not completely, but certainly where the data that is being generated by the platforms is really there in order to deliver the end service to the user and to improve that service to the user. But there is no sharing of that data. That data is not being sold so that it stays private and users can go ahead and enjoy the use of the technology without having to worry about their privacy being violated.
That makes sense. Guillermo, why was device integration such a significant challenge with that first generation of IoT devices?
I think it was lack of understanding from both owners and probably providers. There seemed to have been a haphazard approach to device integration and what devices could be integrated. So the promise of any device, anytime would work on a platform just wasn't true. And I think that now there's a clear understanding that the platform has got to be compatible with the choice of door locks, thermostats, sensors, et cetera. But in the past, I know that I saw a lot of requests of, we've got an existing smart thermostat. Can that work with XYZ door lock? And can that work with your hub? And why can't it? So I think there was a lot of initial education around device integration and how that would work, including the protocols, right? Whether it's Zigbee, Z-Wave. I think now we're in a place where most people understand that it's dependent on the protocols that they're on for wireless.
Because it was the protocols that were causing a lot of the challenges then?
Much of it had to do with protocols, but also ensuring that whatever platform you have, the devices are whitelisted for that platform as well. There's got to be a lot of QA done in order for the devices to work on anyone's particular platform, particularly if you asked in your previous question around security, right? You want to make sure that those devices are going to pass security protocols for whatever provider is installing those devices.
Great. Thank you. Ned, what were some of the common reliability issues with early IoT devices? How did they impact day-to-day operations and costs?
Yeah. So I think that it's worth noting that the sort of technological problems that were being solved and that the early providers were sort of building technology solutions for were extensive, and it's really challenging. It's a really difficult technology stack to build. And so I think that a combination of there were new solutions and new technologies that were being leveraged that just hadn't been fully developed and they were still maturing, that coming together with just this was a new industry and this is the first time that these things are putting out into the wild and really being tested. So the two big challenges, and Guillermo touched on it a little bit, but I think the two big challenges really had to do with connectivity. And when I say connectivity, I really mean from cloud services that are running in a provider's cloud, connecting down to a hub or a bridge that is sitting in a unit, and then the wireless connection between that hub or bridge and the end devices that would be in that unit. So there are two distinct problems. So Guillermo talked a little bit about one of those challenges, that a lot of the approaches that were taken from a connectivity standpoint, they were leveraging legacy connectivity solutions and network topologies that were used for single family homes. And that works, pretty well for certain styles of multifamily properties. But when you do get into your mid-rises and your high-rises, that starts to become really challenging. And the same approaches that worked in the past, they just weren't working reliably enough for the specific multifamily properties with that kind of property type. Some of the other challenges as it relates to wireless communication between your hubs and your bridges and your end devices, a lot of that had to do with the support for the protocol. So Yerma mentioned, Zigbee mentioned Z-Wave. These protocols are technologies in their own right, and they need to be invested in. They need to evolve. They need to mature over time. And those things were still coming along, being refined, sort of smoothing out. So what you would end up seeing is in deployments in the early days, the ability to, for instance, automate commands happening to a vacant unit. That might happen inconsistently because connectivity to that unit when Wi-Fi or internet wasn't present, that was intermittent because maybe that unit was sitting in a dead spot from a cellular connectivity standpoint. The other thing that you might see is that command success rates. So a user is looking at their phone, they tap to change the setting of the thermostat or lock or unlock a door. The percentage of which those commands were successful was low enough where folks just didn't trust that the systems were going to do what they wanted them to do. And I think if you think about that, it kind of undermines the value of the platform. And so if folks aren't really adopting it because they're not seeing that consistency from a reliability standpoint, they're just not going to use it to the extent that it could be used. And that underpins the sort of fundamental value of the platform overall.
Well, multifamily is slow to adopt anyway. And so when you have something that's not performing at a technology level the way that it should, they're waiting for everybody else to see, okay, is it working?
Yeah. I mean, it happens with all new technologies, right? Mm-hmm. Whether it's you're using an iPhone in the late 2000s, guess what? It doesn't work the same way that an iPhone works today. So there's always going to be a bit of a curve and there's going to be time for those solutions and the technologies to refine themselves and to get better.
Very true. So Guillermo, to avoid mistakes, what tips would you offer property owners when they are evaluating and implementing new IoT solutions?
You know, I don't want to get on a pulpit. So I'm going to offer up that Ned weigh in as well, because I don't want to go on for 10 minutes on advice on this. I will say one of the first pieces of advice overall is for an owner to have a clear understanding of their vision of what they want for their property. Once they understand what they want for their property, the next thing is have a good, clear understanding of what they currently have in their property and how they want it to work. After that, it's communicate, communicate, communicate. Because if the vision is, I want something that is going to work a resident cell phone from the moment I walk in or from the curb or from the gate in their car all the way through to their apartment, is really they need to look at from a spatial standpoint how that looks and how that's going to work and what are the integrations required. So you're no longer just looking at a door lock and a thermostat inside of a unit. You're really going to need to clearly understand and communicate to the provider, I want this to work this way. I want it to be as seamless as possible. How's that going to look? How do we get there? And have an understanding of today, I may have, I'm not going to name brands, but I have X brand at the gate. I have X brand that is at the main entrance. I've got X door locks today. I have privacy locks. I have a property that 50% of the thermostats have a hot wire and 50% of them do not have power to the thermostat and their battery operated. So how is that all that going to work? And really have a partner that can work through all of that and provide the answers. And sometimes the answers is it can't be done, although someone may not want to hear that. Sometimes that's the right answer. And it's, you know, how far down the road can we get with what we have? Or what does the roadmap look like to getting there for an owner? So I really think, in summary, it's really taking a look at what's the vision for the property, what's there today, and what are the steps and what do they want to see on how they get to an end state?
Well, because that vision allows you to kind of reverse engineer what you want to have happen. Ned, it looks like Guillermo invited you to weigh in on that. Are there any things that you would recommend for people to avoid mistakes when they're evaluating and implementing new IoT technology?
I think that Guillermo hit the main points. I think making sure that there's a sort of clarity in terms of what the goal is. So I'd say the three big categories that folks who end up deploying and being successful with IoT in multifamily, the big problems are, that they're trying to solve or the benefits that they're trying to get. Curb to couch access control, transitioning that from physical credentials to digital credentials. That's one. Starting to automate some of the key property management workflows that have to do with the unit lifecycle, starting from leasing it up when it's vacant, moving folks in, supporting them while they're living in that unit, and then how you turn the unit over and prepare it for the next occupant to move in. And then finally, how are you meeting the demand that residents have in the modern day to have certain technological benefits in their day-to-day life? Those to me are the three big categories. So evaluating whether those are important to the sort of plan for the property and the way that that property is going to perform from a financial standpoint. And then to Guillermo's other point, just being really clear about what are the physical sort of characteristics and traits of the property that you're thinking about for IoT. You have more control, obviously, in a new construction environment, but the big opportunity for IoT and multifamily is with existing properties. There's 50 million market rate professionally managed properties out there, and IoT can be deployed in the majority of them. You just need to be really sort of looking for what are the little sort of quirks and characteristics of the property that we have to be mindful of when designing a solution, and then proceeding in a way where you're going to be sort of balancing the objectives that you have from a business standpoint with the limitations or some of the constraints that might be there from a physical property standpoint.
Yeah, all very good considerations. Guillermo, do you want to add something to that?
Yeah, I knew Ned was going to have a much better answer than me. His three categories, I think, were spot on. I would just add one more, which is connectivity. How is the connectivity going to work to get out to the cloud? I think that that's also a major pillar in the three. So I actually think there's four pillars from when we look at it at Cox.
Yeah, I like that. Ned, as we kind of have talked about this, let's talk more about the progress. What have been some of the most significant advancements that have been made in IoT technology since those first generation devices that we were talking about? What have you seen that's been really good in the world of IoT?
Yeah, for sure. So I mean, the technology has moved forward as it always does. I think that there's been a significant number of advancements across a number of different fronts. Just a couple of them that come to mind, the quality of the end devices and sensors. So each sort of new generation of devices and sensors that you're going to be deploying into a property, they're improving all the time. So the chipsets are getting better. The way that they're optimizing for things like battery life, that's always advancing. So that's gotten a lot better since the mid-2010s. The way that a lock performs that you deployed in 2016 compared to what you should expect from it in 2024 are very different. The second would be just that folks have been spending time solving those challenges around connectivity. So we actually came up with a really creative solution to solve connectivity in the mid-rise and high-rise buildings by looking at the traditional network topologies that were used by providers to deploy that connectivity. And we established the industry's first mesh connectivity. So that mesh really enables you to avoid dead spots, to be able to provide 99% uptime, and to do it in a way that's cost effective. So the thing, of course, that we have to keep in mind here is that technology that can work, but that is going to be too expensive for it to make business sense to deploy, it's not going to see much light, right? There's not going to be too much adoption for it. So the mesh solution that we've sort of really invented, it does the two things that you need from a solution when you're talking about needing to have somebody make a big investment in it. One, it has to be exceptionally reliable, but two, it needs to be approachable from a cost standpoint. If it's cost prohibitive, then you're not going to go anywhere with it. I think the third thing is that just the ability for those wireless protocols to be used by product makers has gotten a lot better. So a practical example of this is that the owner of Z-Wave, Silicon Labs, just a couple of years ago, finally put out a SDK that they support for product makers that addresses some of the challenges that product makers were running into in the early days of the industry when it just came to issues, like known issues with the fundamental Z-Wave protocol. So you start to combine those things together, and the net effect that it has is just that that end user experience is much more reliable, it's much smoother, things happen faster, and then you start to see that adoption tick up and you get more value from the investment from an owner and developer standpoint.
So would those be some of the certain like new efficiencies or capabilities that the property managers have also gained? Like what are some of those with the improved IoT solutions have they been able to take advantage of on site?
I'd sort of put it into two categories. I would say that you know, we talked about the promises and sometimes where platforms were falling short in the past. I think with the advancements in technology, the ability to recognize the fundamental promise of IoT and multifamily became a reality. So that's something where there's more value around the core tenants now than there was in the past. I think that what else has happened is there's been an extension of the applications of those sort of core devices and of the core platform in the property. I think TORS is a good example of this. So curb to couch access control, I think when most people think about it, they think about, okay, I'm a resident. I'm walking up to the exterior door. I've got a grocery in hand. I want to be able to get in, and then I want to be able to get into the elevator, and then I want to be able to get into the unit. And I don't want to have to be fumbling between keys and fobs and potentially have forgotten something. The way that we think about access control and why it's such a driver of adoption and interest in IoT and multifamily is there's a lot more stakeholders than just residents and staff. There's visitors, there's guests, there's prospects. And all those folks have different sets of needs when it comes to how do they gain access to the property. And then from the owner and developer standpoint, they want to allow that to happen. They want that to be convenient, but that also has to be safe. So you can't just prop the door open and, you know, let people in. So I think, you know, the COVID years started to really push on people to get creative in terms of, hey, how can we allow for prospective residents to see spaces, do it in a secure manner, but maybe do it with less staff on site or do it after hours. So when you start to have really reliable core technologies there, it allows you to extend the business application of those things and to get more value. So the ability to allow prospects in after hours, for staff to be able to trust that the solution is going to do that. You're not going to have someone show up for a self-guided tour at 7:30 at night and, oh, actually, I can't get into the front door of the building to go and see Unit 101. So I think that that's a good example. It sort of builds off of the fundamentals and the foundation of the platforms, but starts to generate incremental value by leveraging a lot of the core technologies that have been worked on for many years.
Definitely. We've come a long way with some of that technology, and it's amazing to see what they can do now. So Guillermo, how can they ensure that they choose reliable and compatible IoT devices? I know you said that the platform was important.
You know, I'm going to take this opportunity to answer that question with a little bit of a actual true life story of something that happened. So we worked with an owner at one point that was looking at devices, looking at our portfolio of devices, and at one point said, you know, something doing managed IoT is not something for us, but yeah, so we're going to go in a different direction and try and see what we can do on our own. They thought that they were being prudent in ordering the same brands that we had presented to them. And, you know, later on afterwards, they decided, you know, something doing it on our own isn't really working. It doesn't do quite what we wanted to do. It's not working for us. So we do need a managed platform. Why don't you guys come in? All you got to do is install a hub and the devices are already there. You told us that you were using XYZ Lock, and that's what we got. Locked, when we got there, looked exactly the same as the current lock that we're using today, but it happens to be a discontinued generation model-wise by the provider. So they picked it up on Amazon for a lot less than what we were selling the updated lock. Now, the things that owners may not know is when a lock is discontinued by the manufacturer, you know, as far as support-wise, it's not going to get security updates in the future. So that's a huge issue and risk that most companies, most platform providers are not going to take on that risk of whitelisting or putting that lock on their platform if they're not going to have security updates from the manufacturer. So
that's
the importance and why it's important to make sure that the devices are compatible with the platform.
Absolutely. So Ned, what should property owners and managers look for in contracts and service level agreements that they have with their vendors to ensure successful deployments?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. So first and foremost, I would certainly come back to the point that we made earlier about privacy and use of data. So I would ensure that there's something in black and white that says that the data is not going to be shared or sold to third parties. I think that's an important one. I also would just say that some kinds of guarantees or safeguards around warranties and the expectation of performance of the platform and the devices. You know, this is kind of taking it off a little bit and tying it back to what Guillermo was just saying. I think that folks sometimes, especially when there's pressure, will make a near-term decision and they'll sort of lose sight of medium-term and long-term strategy. And so folks that decide that they want to try to save some money by sourcing their own devices and deploying it, or even just sourcing their own devices, installing those devices, and then having a platform come in and support them. It's really easy to make mistakes. These things, they're very particular. You have to be very precise in terms of exactly what model, what firmware is running, and ensuring that that is being updated when it gets in the box and that's verified at the time of installation. So another recommendation that I would just have is be careful to try to really pinch pennies at the margin and to lose the ability for the provider that you're working with to extend warranties and performance to you, because you're trying to take on some of that work and you're just not getting the sort of collective benefits that come from working with a company that has probably been doing this for quite some time. One of the things that is beneficial in working with a provider that is really thinking about this end to end is that so much of the success of the deployment has to do with how rigorous was the inspection or the review of the plans, and then how effective was the design of the actual technology solution for any given property. So one of the things that we do that I think is something that should become a standard in the industry is that we have a no change order guarantee. So one of the things we pride ourselves on is that we're really meticulous upfront about, let's make sure that we really do understand the nuances of this property, so that when we put forward a proposal, we put forward a design, if we get out there and we missed something, that's on us. The last thing that owners and developers like to deal with is a change order, where they've been really meticulous about a budget and understanding how that flows through to when their investors are going to see returns. Here comes a $50,000 bill because, you know, we missed some little thing that is easy to miss, but it has significant consequences. So yeah, just in terms of the sourcing of the devices, being really dialed into that, making sure that you're working with providers that can give you guarantees that force them to put their money where their mouth is in terms of quality. And then also just making sure that you're really thoughtful about looking for that language to ensure that the privacy of the end users is going to be protected by that provider.
Well, and Guillermo touched upon the security updates and things like that. Obviously, they are important, but like how important from a service level agreement even? Are you working that into the agreement as far as regular security updates and firmware upgrades, maintaining that IoT device security and performance? Is that able to be worked into the agreements, or is that just something that's maintained?
Well, I think you'd have to do it, since the providers are typically supporting lots of different manufacturers with lots of different protocols in terms of the way that they actually go about delivering those updates.
How much is the property's responsibility? Is it the provider doing all of that, or does the property have anything to do with it?
I would say that it's the provider's responsibility. It's a managed service, right? One of the things that I think is important to note here is that these things evolve over time. So a choice that a device manufacturer makes, for instance, to end of life a certain device, to some extent, that's going to be beyond the control of a platform provider like us. So I think what is important from a service level agreement is that there is a transparency that's provided by the platform about updates that have been provided to the platform from the device manufacturers about what's happened to the device or the sensor that's been deployed in a particular property. So that will at least establish a sort of transparency around what are the potential risks of not upgrading a particular device to a version that is going to be supported moving forward. So that's the kind of thing that I certainly think should be discussed, and you should be looking to work that into the contracts that you have. Trying to control exactly how either side goes about addressing challenges as they come up. Solving that with a legal approach, it might end up taking a lot of time and some money and not necessarily getting you to a spot where you're solving the root cause of the problem or really benefiting either side.
So Guillermo, what best practices should management teams follow to ensure that they have proper connectivity and usage of the IoT devices that are actually within their properties?
You know, we learned early on, and we learned it the hard way, actually, is we would visit properties and we would ask how things were going with IoT. And we learned very quickly as an organization that the superficial question of how are things working would always get the answer. You know, humans are humans, and they're going to say, oh, things are working great, if they like the person that's asking them, right? So what we started to find out is when we actually dug a little deeper and would actually ask the question of, hey, you know, on your property, do you set the automatic thermostat settings on in your vacant units in order to save on energy? Oh, yes, we do. Then if we have followed it with the question of how exactly do you do that? Oh, we go to a thermostat and we set the thermostat. It's like, did you know you could actually do it through the software, either on your phone or you could do it in the application on your desktop? So what we learned quickly is that there's a lot of ongoing training and reinforcement that needs to happen with the property staff. Property owners don't hire property staff to be technology experts. So the provider needs to be that expert, needs to help the property staff with it. So what we do at Cox is we actually, for the first 90 days of a deployment, we send out our account management team twice a week, not to take up time with the property staff, but actually just to check in to see how things are going. We'll visit actually with usage reports and see, hey, you know, no one on the properties set the vacant unit thermostats. You know, do you know how to do it? Let me show you how to do it. We also, after that period, on a monthly basis, visit the property because there's always going to be turnover. And when you have someone new, they may not know how the platform works. They may not know how to set the door locks. They may not know how to reset codes for someone's moving in that's brand new or someone has moved out. So we make sure that we are visiting the property constantly to see who's new. And make sure that they're using it. Because really it starts with the property team being comfortable and trusting the technology. I think Ned mentioned it early on that, you know, it's the property management team needs to be comfortable that when they send out a open door lock, that the door is going to open. It's not going to be, oh, you know, some hubs work, some don't. So I can't trust it to do it. They have to be able to trust the technology and that it works every time that they're going to want to use it. So for us, the best practice has really been around ensuring the property staff is using it, is comfortable with it, because if they are, then the residents are going to easily use it.
Well, I think those repeat visits, continuing to see if there has been staff turnover, because they're not going to know if they just started the community, they're just trying to lease the apartments. So it's good that you talk about the going back and making sure that new people know what to do as well. How can they proactively address and troubleshoot any potential connectivity issues that there may be? Because if that's happening, you know the residents are walking into the office and talking to the teams. What can they do?
Connectivity issues in the unit are very, very rare from a standpoint of the door, the thermostat, the app working. That's usually going to be working for a resident. One of the things that's a best practice is to always ensure that there's a fail safe and that it fails down. It's one of my favorite sayings, right? You know, if there's no power, if their phone is going to be out and they lose phone, is there a way for them to enter that unit without having to go through the cloud? Because usually if there's a connectivity issue, what we've found a lot of the time, it has to do with cellular connectivity, or they're using cellular as a backhaul. Connectivity issues beyond that may have to do with the provider and how they're connecting that hub out beyond the unit. So there it's very difficult for an owner to actually troubleshoot. So really it's having a partner that's going to understand how that connectivity works. And one of the things that we like at Cox as being a provider of both solutions is that there's no finger pointing. So when they call us to troubleshoot, we know instantly, is it really a hub? Is it really a device that's in the unit? Or is there a connectivity issue going out from the unit to the cloud?
And because of the managed system, you're able to access that information, find the data, find where the problem is. I would like to address both of you with this question. What emerging IoT technologies do each of you see as having the most significant impact on multifamily communities in the near future? What's on your mind? Ned, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I don't know how near the near future here is, but when it comes to IoT and any type of residential IoT, Matter is the thing that has been focused on and talked about and anticipated for many years. Matter is obviously a sort of interoperability standard that helps to address challenges with sort of fragmentation, both for end users, but then also for device manufacturers and for product providers. So I'm interested to see how Matter progresses over the coming years and what that does from a competition standpoint. within the end device and sensor sort of realm, and to see if that can start to simplify, frankly, the job that we have to do from a platform standpoint of providing quality, cost-effective solutions to owners and developers.
Interesting. Okay, thank you. Guillermo, what about you?
You know, I'm probably not going to have as sexy an answer as Ned. For me, what keeps me up at night from what I'm hearing from owners is everybody wants to move to having a single platform, single app for a resident, curb to couch. And that's starting to expand curb to couch, EV charging, right? So how do you incorporate billing, all of those things? So for me, it's going to be interesting how the future evolves when we're looking at how do we integrate all of these touch points and what does connectivity look like, incorporating Matter, Zigbee, Z-Wave, Wi-Fi, and all of the different needs that a property may have, everything from using AI or smart cameras and counting traffic to are the basketball courts being used, the tennis courts being used, or should it be wiffle ball or something else?
I think pickleball is there. A new trend, yes?
I'm going to turn that into a trend. Or, you know, EV charging, how does that all that get integrated into a property and what is the easiest way for residents to access all of it?
So how can property managers and owners then prepare for and integrate these new technologies into their existing systems? Because some of them will already have some of these things in place. How do they integrate them?
The way that you would take advantage of Matter with the existing deployments that you have is that you have to be working with providers that have designed aspects of their platform specifically in terms of the hardware to be compatible with that protocol in the future. So one of the things that we do is that we're really thoughtful about what radios are in our bridges and our hubs so that if there is a real sort of surge in terms of interest in Matter compatible devices, there's firmware updates that could be done where the end devices and the sensors that have already been invested in a property could be used moving forward. I think that it's also important to note that these devices and these sensors do have their own life cycle that they run. If you put a door lock in 2015, unlike a analog deadbolt that you might have put in 20 years ago, you're going to have to upgrade that lock at a certain point in time. So I don't think that it's a sort of the technology is a cure-all for the need to make recurring investments in IoT in order to substantiate the value of it and ensure the value of it over time. But there are certainly ways that you can approach sort of building your platform in a way that allows you to take advantage of some of the benefits that happen specifically around hardware as technology changes moving forward.
Well, and it sounds like being aware of what the lifetime of a device might be and planning that appropriately in budgets as well so that they're prepared when they do have to replace those things.
Absolutely. Yep.
So Guillermo, do you have anything to add to that?
Absolutely. For us, it's really taking a look at the backbone of the property and planning appropriately for everything that you're going to do. Because how devices communicate within the property, Zigbee, Z-Wave, Matter, even over Wi-Fi, addresses one piece of it. But then how the residents and everything else is going to get out of the property out to the internet is very important. So ensuring that the infrastructure is there, but also ensuring that the infrastructure is there for future commitments. So you may today be building a new build today, and you may have decided that you're not going to put EV chargers in today. But if you're going to plan for the future, you need to make sure that you plan for the infrastructure and the wiring and power to be there for where you may be placing EV chargers in the future in that parking lot. Because it's much more expensive to run an Ethernet line underground when the pavements are already been put in. So much easier to plan for in advance, even if you don't put it in. Same thing goes for any exterior things that you may want to mount that are going to require a hardwire connection and not rely on Wi-Fi. So for us, it's really taking a look at, you know, a new build where it's easy, where you can pre-plan it, save money in the future by ensuring that it's not future-proofed, but as future-ready as possible. And then the brownfield world is, again, looking at, okay, what is the plan? And making sure that as you're planning for it, whether it's all up front in one or you're taking steps to get there, that you have a good understanding of what it's going to take. You'd be surprised how many owners call us and say, hey, we just put in EV chargers, but there's no connectivity where we put it. Great. We can help with that. But then it's, okay, you know, how do we get connectivity to it? Are you okay with wireless? Or are you going to require a hardwire connection for that particular device? And then where is that wireless item going to be mounted that's going to be close enough? So got to take all those things into account.
Well, and it just goes to show that it really does come down to each individual community, and they're also different and they require a unique and individualized approach for each one of them. So thank you both for so much information today. We've come to the end of our time together. And to wrap up today, I wanted to give you both a moment to leave the audience with a little bit of parting advice. So what for each of you is the most important thing that you want them to take away from our conversation here today? Guillermo, I'm going to start with you for that one.
I would say that from all things that we talked about, really working with a reputable company that is asking the right questions to ensure that they understand the owner's vision. Where is it, whether it's a new build or an existing property, what is the end state they're looking at? And what do they want to make sure that they're prepared for? Again, I don't like and I hate using the word future-proof because nothing's ever future-proof, if you ask me.
Right.
But this at least so that you can have a property upfront know what it's going to take to be as future-ready as possible. So it's having that really good understanding, having a partner that asks the right questions to get you there.
That's great. And Ned, parting words of wisdom from you, what are they?
Making sure that owners are thinking about the benefits that IoT can bring, not just to their new builds, but also to their existing portfolios. And to be thinking clearly about what is the strategy if they do want to get into IoT. Coming back to those sort of core tenets around access control, automation of property management workflows, and then how they are addressing the demand of residents in the current market. So keeping that in mind and then working with providers that have experience and are going to be sort of transparent and straightforward about the approaches that they take in order to deliver value across those pillars.
Because communication is indeed key. So thank you both for being here with me today. I had a wonderful time discussing all of this with you.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Valerie.
Thanks again to Ned and Guillermo for being on the show today and sharing so many valuable insights. Their expertise has given us all a deeper understanding of the evolution of IoT technology in the multifamily industry and the exciting advancements on the horizon. To our listeners, we appreciate you tuning in. And if you enjoyed the show, please remember to like, follow, subscribe, rate, and leave us a review. I'm Valerie Sargent, and this has been Open Door, brought to you by Cox Communities.